Hi, today is May 13th, 2018. This is Mother's Day. I mean, I'm not Mother's Day, but, you know, it's Mother's Day. So happy Mother's Day to those of you who are.
Yep.
And to those of you whose moms are still here with us, hope you have a chance to call them and say that. Any rate, I'm Todd Ogaswar, good friend John Westfall, and today we're mostly going to talk about Google I.O. and Microsoft Build, such as it was.
Yeah, I confess that there was not much that really I thought was crazy new and unique, but some interesting things here and there.
Yeah. Well, first I wanted to mention something that I've run into personally twice now, and that's here in Hawaii. Recently, and by recently, I mean last couple of weeks, I'm going to say last 3 weeks or so, a whole bunch of people, including me, have been receiving these kind of mysterious robocalls that speaks to you in Mandarin Chinese. And unless you speak Mandarin Chinese, you don't really know what they're saying. But fortunately, for those of us with Google Translate and voicemail, mine went to voicemail, and I ran Google Translate on it. And it said pretty much what this NPR article talking about an international phone scam going on, targeting areas of North America. And I say North America, is apparently it's in Canada too, Canada and U.S., getting these robocalls. And before I guess we get started, I'll just let you know what it sounds like. Let's see if I've got this running here. Yep. So, they even have a little music in the background. I'm not exactly sure what the music is. I guess I could run Shazam on it and find out, maybe. But, anyway, I've gotten it twice on the same phone, different phone numbers. One was a local number to me, and the other one was, I think, a San Francisco number. But, yeah, it was a San Francisco number. And like I said, a whole bunch of people I know have gotten these calls. For the most part, they're annoying. Apparently, they're targeting people who have immigrated to North America, to the U.S. and Canada from China. And it's kind of a threatening call. And of course, if you don't know what they're saying, it's not very threatening. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I thought it was interesting that I could use Google Translate to, you know, dig into it before news articles started appearing. And here in Hawaii, I think I saw a news article a couple days ago, which was, you know, a few days after I got my call and a couple weeks after other people had gotten theirs. According to the NPR report, this has been going on for several years. So it's just hitting Hawaii now for whatever reason. They're just calling blocks of phone numbers.
Interesting that it is somewhat threatening and yet it has music in the background.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? I'll put a link to the NPR article, so you can, anybody interested can figure out, you know, well, not figure out, but learn what else is coming from. So anyway, the NPR article says, and my translation was pretty close, said somebody from the Chinese consulate is calling and needs to call the Beijing Police Department because she's been investigated for financial crimes in China. Says this is the consulate. We have an important document that needs to be picked up. It may affect your status in the U.S. and presumably in Canada. Says Canada. Press a button to speak with a specialist. I think mine said press 9 to speak with a specialist, and then you get to like somebody doing a scam. But at any rate, if you get that call, don't press a button. It is kind of interesting, as you heard. Could get annoying. Some of us are keeping account of how many we get. How many calls we get? I'm at 2, so I'm tied with other people. No, that's not true. I think some other people have gotten 3. Any rate.
It's just interesting that you've made it into a competition at this point.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't do Pokemon Go, so this is as close as I get. And you had an interesting question before we got started, is whether people pick up calls from unknown numbers.
Yeah.
And the answer is yes, but I know people have picked it up.
Well, yes, and you brought up a point also that if you don't have caller ID, you don't know who's calling. So,
right.
Although many phone systems now, especially even in rural areas where they're phasing out the older phone system to go into trying to get everyone over onto voice over IP, caller ID is a standard feature. So it's interesting, even my in-laws who I don't think ever bought caller ID, got it in an upgrade years ago, and they use it quite a bit now to not answer phone calls.
So they have a phone. They have a landline phone with a VoIP phone with a display or something.
Yeah,
I see.
They have and all their phones. They have the cordless phones throughout the house that are all keyed into that. But one of the things that I just think is interesting is how the telephone used to be something that interrupted your life. Mm-hmm. As soon as it rang, you excused yourself from whatever conversation you were in or whatever you were doing, and you picked it up and. Who knows who was on the other end of it? And now it's almost become just another notification, and maybe I deal with it, maybe I don't. So for perhaps the older generation, this might be a very lucrative scam. I think most in the younger generation are just not even answering the phone when it calls, and it goes to voicemail, and they listen to it and go, I don't understand Mandarin, so oh well.
Yeah, a couple of points or comments. One, here in Hawaii, our ILEC, I believe caller ID is still an option. I know I pay for it. And so not everybody has it. And, you know, you need a special phone. And basically by that I mean a phone with some kind of visual display that displays the caller ID. And not everybody has that. So the target audience presumably may not have that.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, some large portion of them. So kind of interesting. The other one is your comment about who picks up the phone and not, you know, regardless of whether it's landline or cell. I kind of find the opposite. I find that younger people will pick up the phone in the middle of a conversation.
Hmm.
Yeah. And older people kind of look at it and go, take it later.
That's interesting. I have noticed that my students, some of them are tied to phones in a way that I've never quite understood, where they literally have headsets in their ears all day, and we'll pick up a phone call, you know, as you're talking to them. I haven't seen that. But that's, I wouldn't even say, that's in the, like, 18 to 25-year-old range.
Yeah.
That's, you know, early adult, still sort of learning about, I wouldn't say learning about priorities in life, but still figuring out what you need to do to be taken seriously and what you don't. And I realize that for a lot of those students, they don't quite understand the impact that behavior has on how other people perceive them. And I think once they start realizing that, they will stop doing it as often. but maybe I'm just being an optimist.
I don't know. Well, you know, it's one of those, you know, long-term studies. We'll have to watch this young population grow and see whether or not they change. My theory, they're not going to change.
Well, we shall see. That might mean that by the time I am in my 60s and 70s, mm-hmm. I'll be one of the few people that can devote my undivided attention to someone.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting. That'll be an interesting thing to be the only person left that can do that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I got bored while you're talking. I was looking at my phone. I'm kidding. yeah, but no, it is an interesting phenomenon. It's kind of like a, you know, we need to do like, or some, not we, but somebody should do sort of an anthropological or sociological study to see the shifting trends of phone etiquette, whatever that may be. Anyway, that was kind of interesting, if not annoying. I'm trying to see it as interesting and not annoying because I know I'm going to get more of these, although I block them as fast as I can when I get them on the cell phone. Let's see. Now, so this past week, both Google I.O. and Microsoft Build, I almost said Microsoft Meh, but that was not, took place. I guess you didn't find anything that interesting. I found a couple of things interesting.
Well, there are some interesting things from a, you know, to me, the takeaway was we're building a lot on the back end.
Yeah.
There are three things. We're building a lot on the back end.
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. Second thing, you are going to use Google Assistant whether you want to or not.
Yes.
You know, it's not an option. We have decided that you want to talk to inanimate objects, and so you're going to do it. And in that same kind of vein, we're going to even enforce standards and etiquette. I mean, did you see the, you know, starting later this year, the parents can enable pretty please setting on a system, which requires kids to say please?
Yes.
So Google has decided to go all out. Not only will you talk to us, to our inanimate objects, you will be nice to them and you will respect them for the good work they're doing. And yeah, everything, I guess there was only two things. Really, it's we're doing a lot on the back end. We're going to have a new version of Android this year. That's great. No one will get it for another 3 years. But, you know, they'll have a new version of Android. And if you don't like Google Assistant, if you don't like talking to it, or you're not really a big fan of the cards and using it on your device, there's really not much for you in terms of cool new things overall.
No, no. One thing I will note, though, about the politeness setting for a Google Assistant or Amazon Echo or both? I can't remember. But when my daughter was home this past, maybe it was last summer, and she already had an Echo Dot, so she'd been using it pretty happily. And, you know, I use my Echo all the time. And she said, you know, she's talking to me. She says, you know, you're kind of rude to Echo. You're just always kind of, you know, just telling it to do stuff. I go, well, that's how it works, you know. And so there is some, and there, you know, she's not the only one to make the observation. There's some, you know, written articles about whether or not this having an sort of a non-judgmental assistant, someone who will not judge you as a human being, you know, whether this carries over to other aspects of life. You know, what we just tell people, you know, what's the weather? Hey, John, what's the weather? You know? Mm-hmm. I don't think I do that, but who knows? Maybe if you do this starting as a young child, you know, maybe this thank you, or yeah, maybe this pretty please mode is actually something necessary. Certainly, I noticed that, you know, I don't take the bus very often, but when I've taken, I often take it when I'm, or that, or train when I'm not here at home. And I do notice that, like, young people don't stand up for the elderly and things like that. So maybe it's and by elderly, I mean me. No, I mean actually people even older than me. But, I mean, you know what I'm talking about. The crowd who really does need to sit down when they're in public transportation. And I thought, wow, that's pretty rude. I still stand up for them. Pretty soon people stand up for me, I hope, but who knows. Okay, so I'm not sure if this was announced at Google I.O. or I just read it in Kevin Toefel's blog or whatever it was, but Project Crostini, Crostini, for Chromebooks is something I'm kind of looking forward to, although, you know, I said that about Android apps too. But what it is it allows you to run Linux applications on a Chromebook in a container, which is kind of neat. So you don't have to install, you know, full Linux. Well, I assume you already have a full, it is Linux on the Chromebook, but you know, it uses some kind of like Docker system to containerize applications from Linux. I won't do X Windows and stuff, so it's, you know, text Windows kind of stuff only. But even that's pretty cool. I mean, I'm kind of hoping you can have like a little Python development system or something, you know, Python IDE, uh-huh, and do some stuff like that. So I'm looking forward to that. The other thing is, you know, speaking of Google Assistant, is that they announced some Google Assistant on smart displays from various manufacturers. It kind of like the Echo Show or Echo Spot, which, you know, is basically as Google Home with a little display on it. I'm kind of interested in that. I don't have a Show or a Spot. I just have the regular Echo and Echo Dots in our home. But I'm kind of, mm-hmm, I kind of want to replace my alarm clock, which is my phone.
Yeah, I was going to say, my alarm clock is my phone, and yeah, I'm happy with that. Actually, my other alarm clock is my Sonos smart speaker, I'm happy with what I got on them.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm kind of, if the price point is right, and to me the price point is under $100, maybe say up to $130, I'd be interested in it. The other one, and let me see if I can get it now. The other thing that's interesting is that I didn't realize this. I think I read it in Lifehacker. I didn't put the clip out the URL for this one. But if you have a recent vintage Android phone, and I have a Pixel 2, and I'm going to bring up Google Home now, if I can find it. Here we go. It turns out that the voices that were announced during Google I.O., are now available to you. So, you know, Google, one of the things that was pretty cool announced during Google I.O. is that they have now more human-like speech patterns for voices versus the more, you know, stilted robotic-type voices that we're kind of used to. Even though they're, mm-hmm, much better now, you know, you can still tell, right? And so if you go to Google Home and you go to Settings and you click tap More Settings, and then there is, let's see, I'm kind of looking, it's kind of hard to find. I think it's under Phone. and voice and speech. Oh, here, preferred other voice settings. Other voice settings? Well, like I said, it is hard to... Anyway, it's somewhere under more settings. you can find other voices, and I can't find it now because it's so well hidden. Here it is, assistant voice. And so I'll play a couple of voices.
Now you can choose from different voices.
Hi, I'm your Google Assistant, here to help you throughout your
day. And now you can choose from different voices.
Hi, I'm your Google Assistant, here to help you throughout your day. And now you can choose from different voices for me
to speak with. Hi, I'm your Google Assistant, here
to help you throughout your day. And now you can choose from different voices for me to speak with.
Anyway, so there are 8 voices for you to choose from, both male and female, of various timbres. And I think you would agree that they sound more human in terms of the intonation and the spaces between syllables.
Mm-hmm. I think it's become quite clear that Google has put a lot of effort. You know, as I joked about, it was Google Assistant or nothing. That in no way detracts from the amount of work they're putting into it. Yeah. And any AI, you know, one of the things that came out this week was that these AIs, if you're talking to them on like an automated phone system, are going to start announcing themselves as AIs so that you know that you're talking to a machine. That's, I think, the point at which we know this is starting to get really good, is when a machine has to tell you, hey, I'm a machine.
Yeah, that's Google Duplex, which is also announced this past week at Google I/O. And it's actually, I found it amazing, and I want it. It's going to be available this summer, I believe. And what it does is, under fairly proscribed situations, like calling to make a restaurant reservation or to get a haircut or, you know, that kind of thing, those kind of interactions, it can carry out a near freeform conversation with a human being. And by near freeform is, if I were another end, I don't think I would, you know, if you start asking it other weird questions like, what color is your hair? I don't know. Nobody asked that. But it will deal with things like, oh, I'm sorry, we don't have a reservation that day. Or, you know, you need 5 or more people to make a reservation and you only have 4. And, you know, it can deal with all of those kinds of situations that I found pretty remarkable. I want to get through phone trees for me, because I hate those things. So that would be pretty cool if somebody could add phone trees for the various, you know, various places you would call, like repair shops, your doctor, you know, all those kind of things, where you just either do a DTMF dial tone for you or the human voice input, which I hate. I much prefer using DTMF tones for responding to IVRs. But in any case, it's raised some ethical issues, like you said. He says, you know, is it... Do you need to announce that it's a, you know, hi, Dave, this is Hal, you know, to let the human on the other end know that you're not speaking to human. That said, you know, when you call IVRs and you think you're speaking to a human, for the first few seconds, you're often not. So, and the way I know that is years and years ago, when there was a threat of a strike at the phone company I worked at, those of us who were... management, I use the term loosely, basically people who are not in a union, were told that, you know, we were supposed to cover various activities to keep the system running in the event of a strike. And my duty was to become a telephone operator. And what I learned is that this is in the 1990s, when operators are still very busy. I think it's probably less so now. But what happens is when an incoming call comes in, you're usually still on the other line. You're still online talking to somebody or finishing up a call. And you press a button that starts your announcement. You know, hi, this is Todd, blah, blah, blah. Thank you for calling, blah, blah, blah. And then you end the call and you're on the next call. So there's no break between calls. Mm-hmm. So you are actually talking not to an AI, but, you know, to a pre-recorded canned message. But still, it was in that operator's voice. And, you know, you didn't know you were talking, you're not talking to human until, you know, the human actually you just don't, because the cutover is usually pretty smooth. So they never told us. Anywho. Now, what did you listen to the demos? What did you think of it?
I thought they were decent demos. I did listen to a few things here and there, but like I said, I don't disparage what Google is doing. I think they're doing some cool stuff. It's just not the whiz bang, wow, I'm going to be so happy to have that in my life stuff. It's the stuff that in 10, 15 years I'll go, wow, this is really better than what I had before. But, you know, it's sort of the evolutionary versus the revolutionary. We've talked about that many times, and I worry that we're getting to the point where it's just all going to be evolutionary, and maybe we've hit all the revolutionary things.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the concerns is kind of the weaponization of this, because although from a, you know, from an end user perspective, it's super helpful, but you can imagine what if this gets into the hands of, and it will, right? I mean, it's, you know, openly available technology or pretty close. You know, once other people other than Google have it, and they probably do, they can start making robocalls by the millions to actually interact with people versus just, you know, spew out pre-recorded messages and, you know, try to convince people of various kinds of things to, you know, sell you something or some, you know, political thing or whatever else. So interesting, but I can see how it can be weaponized. So I have some concerns about it, although that's it. I'm really looking forward to getting it on my phone. Hey, well, maybe we'll try a podcast. You know, we'll see if there's a podcast mode and see if you can tell if I'm really talking or it's Google Duplex. All right. Next thing, Android P, we're currently on Android Oreo, is going to have some kind of gesture navigation. The people at I.O. didn't seem to think it was very interesting. I'll wait and see. I don't even know what it really does. Also, Google Smart Compose in Gmail, which I call the new Microsoft Clippy, and it presumes that it can kind of guess what you're typing in response to mail and type it for you. I have my doubts, you know, aside from okay or sure or no or, you know, that. I'm not sure how much. And there's a bunch of things about, and I didn't mean that in a as a pun, but literally called Android Things, which is Google's IoT, Internet of Things. I don't know, you know. We'll see how it goes. Internet of Things is one of those things that, and again, no pun intended, one of those topics that seems to have endless amounts of interest. I know I'm interested in it. You know, you and I both have a few things that do that, lights and so forth. But I wonder how prevalent it'll be in the general public or if it'll be another Google Glasses, you know, where lots of people, there's Google Glasses and Snapchat had glasses and some other folks, but never really took off. Or even the Kinect kind of motion interface, gesture interface never took off. It seemed like a really great idea at the time. We'll just have to wait and see. I think Internet of Things is going to be more of a behind the scenes thing versus a consumer play, personally. Mm-hmm. You know, meters and things like that.
Yep.
Okay. And then there's Microsoft Build. Now, Microsoft, you know, Google does a lot of consumer announcements, as, you know, as we noted in the past couple of minutes. Microsoft Build was really a developers conference, as our friend Don Sorsinelli and a few other folks pointed out to me. And, you know, you shouldn't really expect a lot of consumer-y things. Although they did announce, you know, that Notepad can now do Linux new lines. And I think Windows File Explorer is going to have a dark theme. So, you know, yay. And they did also announce Your Phone. That's the name of the application, which syncs iPhone and Android to Windows 10. Basically what a Mac OS device can do now with an iPhone, but not Android. I don't know. Are you going to do that, John? You going to use Your Phone to sync your iPhone or Android to your... I'm not. I don't see the purpose.
Yeah. You know, I see what they're trying to do, and I see the idea that it would bring better parity to certain things, you know, in terms of messaging and all that. But really, the only Windows device I use is a Surface Pro,
yeah,
and I don't use it at all during the weekend.
Only
at work. So really, the things that that my phone is syncing to, aka my iPad, that's what I want it syncing to. So
yeah.
I don't really know about any other one of these. Now, if I had a Windows machine that was on at all times and, you know, like a home server or something like that, or just a gaming rig that I always had turned on because I gamed a lot or something, then yeah, maybe I'd do something like this. But without having that, I really don't see it as too compelling at this point.
Yeah. So the other thing that yeah, I just, eh, you know, like I said, maybe when I see it, it'll be more interesting than it sounds. I kind of doubt it. The other thing that they Microsoft announces, again, something we already have in macOS, and that is Timeline. Well, actually, it's not even macOS. This is Microsoft Timeline. It will let you effectively pick up where you left off if you are switching between Windows 10 devices. Now, since they don't have a mobile device, that means basically a notebook or a PC, desktop PC. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Is that useful?
It's interesting in that these are questions that we're asking, and I think it's supposed to be inherently, wow, is that useful?
Yeah.
But apparently we're skeptical.
Yeah, this would even be useful 10 years ago. You know, where I had a Windows PC running everywhere, both at home and at work.
Yeah.
And any notebook that I traveled with. But now, and that was when notebooks weren't quite powerful enough to be your desktop or, well, I guess you could, but it was still preferable to have a desktop, in my opinion, you know, larger storage. But now, where like you, you know, we both use a Surface Pro 4 as our PC, period.
Mm-hmm.
That is our PC. It's the only one we use. So I don't have anything to sync with.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing that Microsoft sort of, you know, there was a time, and I was the same way, where 10 years ago I had multiple PCs around.
Yeah.
And I would have wanted something like this because I basically needed to be able to sit down at any PC I was at.
Right.
And everything needed to be synced up together. Now I just carry my Surface Pro and it goes with me. So
yeah.
In one case, this is another situation where one side of Microsoft did something that unintentionally devalued what another side of Microsoft was putting together.
Right.
And of course, Microsoft was 10 years late to the party on it. So,
yeah. Anyway, so that was it. Did you find anything else interesting at Microsoft Build?
Nothing that stood out.
No.
Some cool stuff for developers.
Yeah.
But there's always cool stuff for developers when it comes to Microsoft.
Yeah. And quite frankly, as end users, we won't see it for years.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, if you're a government, I don't know about the education market, but if you are a government enterprise Microsoft customer, you may not ever see it. For example, in Office 365, I think we still don't have Teams. And on the Dynamics side, I think we're still on Dynamics 8, even though 9 is out. So, you know, and it's been out for like a year, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, even though we're a paying customer, we still can't get stuff that's been out for a year.
They might just not like you.
Well, they just don't like governments. They're anti-government, man. Microsoft wants to be the government, but too
late. Well, Microsoft has had its run-ins with the government before. So, you know, they're a little hesitant about letting you government types have all the good stuff.
Well, Amazon will buy them soon. But actually, they're both doing pretty well. So I don't think Amazon could actually buy them. Okay, so one last thing that you have on our show notes.
Yeah, so this is an interesting story I came across this week on Reddit.
Mm.
And I thought this was sort of cool. A guy basically saying, you know, my wallet was stolen while I was out shopping.
Mm-hmm.
And I called my credit card company. And this is one of my pieces of advice I give people. And they look at me like I'm crazy until they actually think to do it. when you get a chance, take all the credit cards out of your wallet that you usually use or carry with you, turn them over and just take pictures of the back where all the phone numbers are to call and cancel those cards.
That's a smart thing to do.
Yeah, if you're ever out and you just, oh, my wallet's gone, if you still have your phone, you can look at that picture and go, okay, I need to call this group, this group, this group, and you can quickly go through the whole list.
Yeah.
So he did that. He called and canceled. And Apple Pay basically disconnected off of, you know, the old card and got the message saying, you know, this card isn't useful anymore. And then 15 minutes later, the new card was already active and on his phone.
Wow.
Which sort of seems like magic. And this is something that it depends on how banks set up their connection to Apple Pay. And a few people in the threads were talking about different banks that did this. Apparently Chase does this. Wells Fargo does this. American Express does this, where as soon as they disconnect your old card and kind of kill it, their systems generate the new numbers almost instantly for you, and whereas you have to wait a day or two or 3 days to get your card in the mail, Apple Pay already figures it out because it already has the connection straight to your account with the bank. So he was able to continue on that day and purchase things with Apple Pay on that same card account, even though the card had been stolen within, you know, the hour. So that's kind of cool, and something that I wish Apple Pay and Android Pay and contactless pay was a little bit more prevalent, because I think this would be a nice safety net. Also, because I know a lot of people who just don't carry, even if they have their wallet, they don't carry a lot of cash. And so,
which is smart.
Yeah, it's smart until all of a sudden your cards don't work, or your cards get stolen, or something along those lines.
Yeah.
But we can have a whole, we should do a whole podcast on travel security tips and mobile security in terms of when you're traveling, so that you're not dependent on if your wallet is stolen, your life is a ruin at that point.
But. Yeah, although there are lots of problems when you're traveling, because, you know, if you lose your driver's license, for example, or your passport, you're sort of dead in the water. You can't get through the, you know, TSA checkpoint in the U.S. or the, you know, whatever the similar checkpoint is in a different country. So I'm not sure what I would do. I guess you have to go to the U.S. embassy to get a temporary passport. I don't know. It's never happened to me, so hopefully never will. Okay. So that's about it. You got anything else, John?
Nothing super interesting. I guess now that we've seen Google I/O and Build,
yeah,
our next step is WWDC, yeah, whatever comes out there. And
Mac Mini. I doubt it.
I doubt that. But there's already starting to be some rumors here and there. Nothing all that crazy, and a lot of evolutionary stuff on macOS and iOS. So I don't know. Hopefully something will wow us by the end of the year. I don't know if there's anything out there, though, that would cause us either of us to buy anything new by the end of the year.
I would buy a new Mac Mini, but that's about it.
Yeah, that ship kind of sailed for me. I already have my QNAP NAS unit over here. I'm kind of off the Mac Mini train, but yeah, it'd be interesting to see if there's anything cool enough, even accessories, where I'd go, oh, I think I'll go buy that.
Yeah. Now, one thing I am thinking about buying, which is not new, but I just haven't gotten around, and it's not very expensive, is the Raspberry Pi 3 Plus, whatever the new one is. I've got the original Raspberry Pi, so it's really old and slow, relatively speaking. There's some pretty cool things on it, you know, you can do with the newer, faster Raspberry Pi 3 Plus, whatever it's called. But that said, that's it. This has been Movies Podcast 254, the Mother's Day edition, with our scintillating discussion of Google I/O and Microsoft Build announcements. More on the Google side, I think, was more interesting. Hopefully, Apple's WWDC will be more interesting, although I kind of doubt it. I think they're kind of in a stabilization mode right now.
Well, we shall see. I will be interested to see it as well as you.
Yep. Alrighty, folks. We will talk to you next time.